When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Sick of procurement bottlenecks? Get the cure with Bill Procurement. Bill is the all-in-one platform trusted by nearly 500,000 businesses to simplify their financial operations. And now they've introduced Bill Procurement, which pairs seamlessly with accounts payable to automate procure-to-pay workflows in one place. Every step, from submitting a purchase request to reconciling payment, happens in Bill Procurement, so your business keeps moving and growing. Score $200 when you see Bill Procurement in action with a demo. Go to bill.com/procurement200. bill.com/procurement200.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
I am George Knapp listening to That UFO Podcast and having one hell of a good time.
Of like non-human craft, yeah. Would they have similar attributes, do you believe, then, that their behaviours would be similar to our pilots who behave in a different way once they have those kind of skill levels and that awareness of their environment?
Absolutely. I think that's a really interesting connection to make, and it would be good to ponder and discuss the qualities. Yes, I mean, if they have... a way to manipulate the craft the way that we can't. Of course, those expertise and those perceptions. And I mean, we don't know, you know, how highly skilled, let's say, their general population is, and whether these are selected beings or, you know, they just, you know, all of them pilot craft, let's say, of where they're from. Or maybe these are, you know, there is a suggestions that it's interdimensional, or there are many theories of where it could be possible from. So, but I think it's interesting to extrapolate what their mentality might be. But then we're making a lot of assumptions. So our assumptions or this connection that we're making is making us not to consider potential boundaries, when we're more like children in our perception, but not discounting our experience, of course, but seeing things for what they are, then our mind doesn't color it, you know, just like my sweater being colored, although I should be seeing black and white. So the same applies in our daily, it's economical for our brain not to think over new things that we already know. So that's the only reason why we see and don't see, or pay attention or don't pay attention, because it's either not threatening or not useful, or, you know, we've got very busy life and we discount a lot of beauty as a result. So, yeah, I think I love to explore this territory of how they might think. In fact, if they think, and if it's a direct telepathy, and there is no this expectation that you don't know what I think, and maybe it's all one, as a forego. So maybe for dogs, it's unusual even, you know, that we don't know what they're thinking, because maybe dogs know what they all thinking. We don't know that still, right? So we don't know if for them it's strange that you and I can't read each other's thoughts, that they'll be standing in front of us and we will have a completely different thing, you know, thinking, and there'll be no crossover. So how do we appear when we don't share the qualities that they do share? We look alike, but we are completely, I don't know, lack certain abilities that they assume we have.
Yeah.
Because they might have that assumption too. I don't know. Maybe, yeah, it's interesting. So it's like us studying another, you know, even coming to another culture. We don't have to even having not even another species, but just coming to another culture of how do we. So the project we had was about English language and misunderstanding during operations in a multilingual environment. And what has happened is that the European population that spoke English, which is not a native language, had minimal to no misunderstanding, versus the British and the US had most misunderstandings, and they were operating differently. And that was because of how they used to operate, how they were trained professionally, and also what assumptions we make about each other's role. Where people who have English not as a first language, they had an anticipation that the other person also not native in English, and they will either be unable to communicate properly, so they made sure that every term they communicated, they've explained it, and they assumed they didn't understand, so they asked additional questions. So that removal of assumptions that go in concepts, because it was conceptual misunderstanding rather than word misunderstanding, so semantic. And that, once that was understood, I don't think it has eliminated the problems, but it highlighted the problem where we make assumptions where we shouldn't. And that is a lot of our problems, that we come in with our framework of how we think other people perceive reality, and then we apply that they can't see with the back of their head, for example, or we assume that dog, you know, can smell, but what if they're not only just smelling, what about if they're sensing in other ways? So all of that almost limits our reaction or interaction, and I would say limits the way we can interact together, and limits the potential for joy and play and connection.
That's probably a nice segue into a chat around telepathy. I know this is something you have an interest in. I've got Kai Dickens, who we're probably going to bring up from the telepathy tapes. She's coming on the podcast next week, and she's going to be discussing the work that's coming out with Telepathy Tape Season 2, the documentary that's being filmed with Dr. Diane Hennessy-Powell involved. Of course, it's largely her work. But what's your take on that whole situation, the idea that these children with various disabilities have extrasensory perception, telepathy, skills? I found it fascinating. The idea of the hill, no doubt you're going to get into that as well, is incredible. And for me, it was something that when I spoke to Kai, a family friend of ours, she lost her daughter just a couple of years ago, who was around, I think Jessica was around 14, and she was completely non-verbal, several different disabilities I won't go into. So never was able in her whole life to speak to her mother in her short life, but I, if you ask her mother, they had a connection and they could communicate in a way that wasn't the norm for everyone else.
I like it. I like this topic because, you know, this mother who had a connection with her daughter, and unfortunately there is this life expectancy, which is short, unfortunately, and that's devastating, having your children go before you, and of course it's horrific for children to lose parents too, but yeah, I'm sorry for the loss of your friend. So what I wanted to touch on is the way Kai Dickens brought, perhaps it's not just Kai, but I think Kai is making this, popularizing it, in communicate this beautifully, and they're saying it, assume competency. So these are not children with disability that we perceive it, and we then assume that they don't know anything. And what we find out is completely the opposite. They know more than we do. So if we walk in to a room and assume that everybody's competent, rather than they are unable to do something. And that's where I think a child's perception, or if we remember ourselves as children as far as we can, keeping our expertise and knowledge, but that perception and non-judgmental approach would help us a lot with meeting another person. You know, it doesn't have to be an alien or a person from different culture or different abilities. But what I found interesting is that people whom I've spoke about this when I started to, you know, listen and understand more and more, they said, oh no, you know, I don't want anybody to read my mind. And I think that's, you know, the way we grow up, because in a way that people keep secrets, they have to keep secrets the way society is built. We're not discussing everything, or we're not allowed, or it's not acceptable to discuss certain topics, although there's nothing wrong with some of the topics that we can't discuss. I mean, we're talking about UAP, right? If people are experiences, why not discussing it? Why certain topics, like when you go to a party, right, you're not supposed to talk about certain topics, or when you're meeting the person first, because that might ethically, you know, you might step on somebody's feelings. So the same thing here. And wouldn't that be beautiful that this new findings, our findings, you know, we're way behind this children or this people with disabilities, that they're opening up, that we can actually, we should be reading each other's thoughts, and there shouldn't be secrets, and there should be openness, and there should be love and connection, and we don't need to hide things. If we just remember how, if you can just imagine how much we can let go, relax, and exhale for how many things we don't need to filter when we need to speak, it would be much more beautiful conversation, much more connection, and we will learn from each other much more. So I think having this beautiful tsunami, I would say, coming from that Kai is generating with this momentum. And, you know, Diana Hennessy Powell has been building this, and I'm sure other researchers and teachers and carers who have went through this have been bringing this forward. This is allowing us to rethink our reality in a, I would say, more kind way that if we could think. And what I really like that what Kai is saying and the families are saying, that these can be used against them, that they feel that they're protected and connected. And that is what is of interest to me. I had this once experience of...
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
Well, as a human as well, but also as an extraordinary experience when I was doing constellation work. So there is a system called family constellation. It's a therapeutic method. I believe it's actually originated in Africa, because the person who brought this method, it will come to me the name. So he brought the system. He was a priest, and he was spreading the Christian word in Africa. And he brought this method of therapy called family constellation. And family constellation is when other people assume a role of the person that you need to make amends with, in a way. But there are many ways you can do this. But an assumption is that people who are willing to participate in this, you have a question that, for example, you want to resolve, or a problem or an anxiety or repeating challenge that you come across, and you bring this to the circle. There is a leader or person who facilitator, rather than a leader, facilitator, and they would discuss with you to get kind of to the feeling that is most closest of when that discomfort that you feel, or that feeling that you want to resolve. And then they decide the earliest when you felt that, and you then remember the situation that you felt that feeling in. And you put people in those roles and ask them to willingly to participate. They have to agree. You ask them, could you? They say, yes, I would. And they will come into a circle. You will place them where you feel you are in relation to them. And that builds a constellation. That's why it's called family constellation. And then in that situation, people start feeling and saying things, not knowing anything about that person, because these are not family members, of what that person experienced then. And it's an extraordinary experience of somehow doing things that you didn't assume. And the less you assume, the better, the more therapeutic it becomes. And there is, you're not punishing anybody, you're not saying bad things, it's not about that. It's about finding the space to feel the feelings that we didn't feel. And the reason I'm talking about this, because one of them was the, in one of those experiences, I was walking up to a figure that was part of me. And I started to experience light, just a lot of extraordinary presence. It just suddenly, and I could see everything in the room, and that was overpowering the space around me. And I felt such extraordinary, I guess, bliss is the way that you would describe it, or I could describe it. But more so, I could see many of us, like many, many of us. It was an infinite space of And I could see in my eyes, mind, I guess, but it was overlooking physical reality, I would say, to me, or overlaying. And that feeling of having relaxation or exhalation came from is that every one of those particles or beings or light knew what all of us knew. So we had one feeling, one sense, one reality. And there was no, the feeling was this, that you don't need to hold on to anything. Everything is known. We know everything. And you don't need to explicate or worry about anything, because everything is available in regard of a mental space for me and feeling space. And it felt, as often is described in this type of experiences, is that it felt, the best I could describe is like coming home. And it's not the home that I was born in. It's not the loved ones that I've here. It's had a different quality. And that experience of not needing to explain, or that everything is known and you can let go of everything. I wish that people experience this feeling that you don't need to hide anything ever again. And we will all be so much better as humanity. And I think these children are bringing this possibility for us to experience this, to experience that you don't need to hold on to what if they read that part of your mind. Assume that they have, you know, what the worst that could happen if they did. And I think part of this telepathy with these entity space, or entities who might be piloting the craft, who might be in a parallel dimension or part of the phenomena or communicating, I think the fear that, this is my assumption, you see, this is an assumption, that we are feeling that we have something to hide, there's something, other agenda to have. And having no agenda, as the child would, and having no assumptions, and assuming that, you know, all the adults are superhumans because we can do these extraordinary things, right? For a child, we are, you know, Superman, Superwoman, and we can lift things, we can create amazing meals, and I don't know, drive the car, fly a plane. And if we come with that attitude, then there is no need to have a second agenda that meets another agenda. And then possibly I feel the telepathy would become much easier, because we construct the barriers, we construct the concepts, we assume we can't do things. And we know when people say I can, they really can do extraordinary things, despite what the medicine says, despite what your physical trainer says, and despite what technology says. So I think there is something for us to learn with this new findings that Diana Hennessy Powell and Kai Dickens and all the families and children and those who are adults now bringing us as gifts.
It's a really interesting experience you had as well. And it reminded me a little bit of what Jake Barber, who you mentioned earlier, he had this experience when he was flying and came close to a craft. You weren't having an experience with a UAP or UFO, but it was something similar. And I often wonder, that idea of all coming from whatever consciousness is one big ocean, and you come out of it for a short time. And I think if you scoop a glass of water out of the ocean and take it around the world with you for 80 years, that glass of water is going to have all these different experiences, go to different places, all different vibrations, whatever you want to call it. And then at the end of that 80 years, if you take the glass of water and throw it back in the ocean, that just goes back to source with all those experiences and takes it back in. And I wonder, is that similar to our consciousness? For me, that would help begin to explain ideas like you had, where you go into like a oneness, what people experience with after life after death sort of experiences, the idea of the hill with the children that Diane Hensley Powell and Kai Dickens are discussing. They've got this almost chat room that they can go to in their minds, whatever it may be. That's the way I like to think of it, that they go and connect with each other. But they just don't have, like you say, those limitations that seem to be put upon us from early years. Frameworks, I think, was a good word you used earlier, that you stick to. But other cultures, depending where you are in the world, don't see these ideas as being as silly or incredible as perhaps folks in the West would. And that they're much more open to, well, yeah, these are just, if you've got a physical reality and a non-physical reality, and you can access different elements of those. So yeah, I'm really intrigued by that idea. And I just want to, before we run out of time, a couple of things I want to get on to talking. You do have an upcoming book, and you've talked about your work, especially with young children, around intuition, the idea that children don't arrive for us to shape them as adults, but for the children to shape us. Do you want to just discuss that a little bit? Because you've kind of touched on it, I think, before.
Mr. Monopoly here. Monopoly is back at McDonald's. Register in the McDonald's app so you're ready to
get your bag.
Two ways to peel for a chance to
get your bag.
Physical peels with select items and digital peels with others to
get your bag.
Play Monopoly at McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
No purchase necessary. See rules at playatmcd.com for full details and amoe.playatmcd.com to play without purchase. Ends November 23rd, but bonus play ends November 2nd. Monopoly is a registered trademark of Hasbro. Copyright McDonald's.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
Yes, thank you for bringing that up. Absolutely. I feel that children and us as children, because we were children, and it's part exists in us, and the young generation, the children born every second around the world, and they are coming up. If we can assume that there is, or some people, some religions actually do say that there is a grander reality or consciousness that exists and looks after all of us, and we are part of it, then these are, if you wish, like you were talking about molecules in the ocean, then these children allow us to almost renovate and reconsider our concepts that we have constructed. So when children ask us something very genuinely, very innocently, it's that truth that is at the most core of our reality. They're really asking us, does it really exist? Do you still believe in it? And it's a beautiful time to reevaluate, is that actually true? And they put us on the spot to reevaluate who we are, how we behave, to open up our perception, and to also breathe differently, live differently, have a different lookout. And they allow us to almost take that spiritual path, or doesn't have to be called spirituality, but it's about reevaluating who we are as a human being and also as a society. A lot of parents change their roles, even from birth, in terms of their professional roles. It is like having a child born. I would say it's probably similar for some people as having an overview effect for an astronaut, because they change your reality of what matters, and that what matters continues to be questioned through children bringing us every time. And it's not about fitting the children into our reality. It's about reconstructing our worldview. So we had a chance to shape it for our parents in a way, if we did, or maybe they shaped more us, but it doesn't matter. It's our opportunity to reevaluate and open our eyes to what the universe is actually like and what could we be like. And if we pause before saying our answer. It's a training in actual mindfulness. And a lot of things that, as I started to experience in Eastern philosophies, I study, I'm Korean medicine practitioner. I studied Eastern philosophies. I studied Japanese philosophies through Aikido. And I studied different cultures and traditions because I started to be interested in consciousness on how they perceive reality in First Nation in North America and also South America. And I am fascinated on how they perceive children. And that gave me an opportunity to start comparing what we think of children in every different culture. And I compare that as well through the classes that we run. And the book was actually not intended to be born. It was born because parents were saying this needs to be wider than just a course. And this, and so I started writing the book after I had already courses, and the discussions from parents went into the book, because I think it's through our conversation, through the discussion that with our children, but also among ourselves, that we find similarities. Similarly, like in this family constellation practice, it is a conversation. And by you genuinely diving in without agenda, but really listening and not having, let's say, with our children and with ourselves, with adults, a lot of the times we're bound by time, but children are not bound by time. And it's our opportunity to reevaluate that. And they allow us to say, well, actually, do we have to leave now? Do we have to rush? Do we have to do this in this particular order? And then suddenly we find out, actually, no, we don't. You know, it was just a construct. So they allow us to open that window that I found spiritual practices are teaching as well. So it's almost like having your own opportunity through our children. It's not that we don't offer them safety and protection and, you know, teach them about what we know, but it's about the mutual discovery of what the reality actually is. And I find that most beautifully, these children with spellers Diana Hennessy Powell are bringing, and Kai Dickens, and all the families are starting to speak up, allowing us to reevaluate what our reality is. And that's what the book is about, is to studying our reality and also consciousness of what it might be. And when I start looking at all the traditions, it's through experience that you are advancing, not through reading. It doesn't mean you shouldn't read, but through the experience where our value systems are affected and we actually do something about it. And hence the UAP, and hence the children with these special abilities, and hence our children are being born and astronauts going to space and extraordinary environments that we put ourselves in. All of that builds up to open our window of perception wider, and our spreading our sensors. So that's, this book is my hope to just, or actually it's our joint wish from the group of participants, that people start perceiving this a bit more, start pausing before they say I know.
I can appreciate that. I've got 3 young children, all under the age of 10. The tiredness and all that kind of stuff. They're 3 very different children as well. Very strong-willed, all 3 of them. I've tried to, I think, I wasn't a young dad. Like, I was 29, 30 when the first one was born. And they do teach you things. And I think it's I've really had to fight with myself to try and enjoy certain things. You know, sometimes you take them to a park and it's cold and it's wet and you can't be bothered being there because you're standing, not doing anything necessarily, but they're running about having a great time. And you think, well, actually, when I was that age, my parents done the same and they were probably a little bit bored, but I remember having a great time. I had fun. It's a great experience. I climbed up a big slide and went down that I didn't normally, and that made me braver because I could go up higher than I did before. And if I just say no and take them away, and my wife's always telling me this, you know, the kids like to do that kind of stuff. I'm not very outdoorsy. I would spend all my time indoors. So yeah, they've definitely taught me a lot of stuff, and I'm trying to reframe the way I think about a lot of things, remembering what I remember as a child and really silly memories I've got of what was fun is the kind of things they are going through now, and just kind of allowing that to kind of help me look at things a little bit differently as well.
Yes, beautiful. Yeah, so it's an invitation. The book is really a storytelling of these journeys of people, and it's touching different cultures and touching different phenomena on Earth, which we assume or take it for granted. And it blends all of that and allows you to find your story, because the deeper practices that are come through Eastern philosophies, and actually any traditions, it doesn't have to be just Eastern philosophy, or it's about self-inquiry.
Is there a link yet for the book? It's not finished yet, so is it on pre-order?
Yes, it will be on pre-order. I'm sure it will be available on Amazon, but I'm still working on the date of release, but it is coming, and I'm already publishing some parts of it on Substack. So if people are curious, there are some elements with practical exercises that are already in the book that you can just take on board and go flow with it.
I'll put the links in the description for folks that they can check those out as well. And just before we finish off with some listener questions, you're presented at Sol in 2023. Now, your talk was about profound encounters people have had but were underreported due to them not possessing the language to describe what had happened. Can you just talk a little bit about that before we mention this year?
Yes. The idea is that we are social beings, and we, when we explain something, we are framed by who is listening, because naturally, I'm not doing this on purpose, but I assume what you know, what your audience might know, who is likely to see it, and that frames of what I say, concepts I share, experiences I share, how I describe them, how far back into my history or the time frame will, all of that will determine of how I would talk. But in addition to that, we have something called pre-verbal knowing. And that I came across when working with pilots, is that, and also surgeons and astronauts, there is a piece of knowledge, we could call this intuition or intuitive knowing or professional intuition, that they, even surgeons, pilots and astronauts, did not know they do that. And or experience that, you know, if you do that, similar domain.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
And what happens is that once you start explaining it to someone, or why they say, you know, you become a better, you know stuff better once you start to teach it, it's because you are going through more detail or more granularities deeper into how you explain it, and you take different perspectives. And this allows the same thing with experiences, is that if we articulate them too early, we dismiss or almost like dishonor some of the feelings that we had, because we're not either comfortable to say it, either for ourselves because of our religion, traditions, values, the way we grow up, the society we're in. But if we could just contemplate on that and make it sacred, you know, to provide the detail, to allow the space for that to emerge before we can speak, before we need to articulate it, and also be almost careful to whom we articulate in the first instance. so that we, because the preciousness of that carries clues to what that is, to what this experience and what that means. And if we almost like, you know, like when you break a bracelet, it falls apart into many grains, or when you spill the beans, you are actually losing what it was in the beginning. And that beginning is most precious. And I feel that there is a lot of keys or clues that we're missing. So not articulating the experience too early is actually helpful. But in having a way to process it, I found the very useful way is to do breathing. Maybe I'm jumping a little bit, but what I found is that, so in the previous session I was saying is that what we're saying is colored by what other people are in front of us. And what we need to do is to either find a safe space when we can talk about this, or encapsulate it first, because we don't have, you know, experts like myself that could help you and, you know, put a camera on you before you have that experience, right? And then we go through it and see all the granularities of it. So what we are doing is we are preserving that experience early enough so we can find the way to articulate it. And that's why people start having questions, and that's why they start reading and, you know, literature that might explain what happened or have the language to explain it. And what I feel is that we can find the language if we're given the time and if we have the opportunity to process it in such a way that we can articulate it. And this is exactly what we were doing with pilots, surgeons, and astronauts, is that we're giving them space without rushing and judging, putting assumptions, and also value on the end, or price, or how could you say, a mark, you know, is it good or bad? So if we don't have that, then we have a much richer way or opportunity to articulate the experience. And a lot of the time, why people go into the field and they want to, let's say, experience the UAP, or they go to places where they might have a phenomena experience, another type of phenomena, is because they feel that there's something more to than to listening to it, rather than reading a story or hearing a story. And it that does hold the key, in fact, it does.
So it's quite a natural follow-up then, that this year at the third annual symposium at Lake Maggiore, which is just a couple of hours from Milan, I'm really excited to see. I'm finally, 5.5 years I've been doing the podcast, and I've never really been to like one of these big events. So this is the first time I'm going to get to go and meet people, and I'm really excited to do so. But you are speaking there, so I'll get to meet you in person. Yeah. The title of your talk is going to be, "What if breath is the bridge between worlds, between the experience and what we can put into words?" Or that's certainly what Sol Symposium have on their site at the moment. So can you touch on what the plan is there?
Yes. So the discussion, it is a continuation from the previous talk on Sol, because we were saying that people are unable to articulate certain things. And and during this past few years, I've been working with therapists as well. And often why therapists are open to work with the people who have the phenomena, despite the stigma that they still have in the profession, and we still do, even in psychotherapy and practices, especially clinical practices. And these therapists themselves, they often had the experience, and that's why they're more open to have other clients come in and work with that. So we all need the support. So I originally was working with how can I assist us who are assisting others with the process to help us articulate our own, because if we can't process our own, then our session becomes kind of a dual way, because we're trying to process what's happening with us. Our curiosity is still at play. It's not bad or good, but we need to be conscious of that. So And this allows their articulation and space by using breath, and often it's at the moment it's called breath work, but it exists in all traditions that I've come across, even in the Korean medicine that I studied. And pranayama, I guess, is one of the holotropic breathing is another. Iceman, you know, like Wim Hof techniques, and there are all of those techniques. But if you use them with a way to process your experience and integrate, it allows you to bring those feelings more to the place where you can start working with them and articulating them, but also understanding them. So they're not just haunting is probably not the right word, but they're not on your mind and you don't know what it is. But we could start coming, bringing that ravine, that bridge, you know, between what we have experienced and what we want to articulate to others, to loved ones, so they could understand us. So it's a tool. So, I mean, my work has always been about tools. It's about, you know, tools how to support the crew in space, tools how to present information to the pilot. So it's all about finding the tool that we can understand ourselves and where we are, so we can become, you know, more kind to each other, really.
I look forward to hearing that in more detail in a couple of weeks' time. But listen, let's finish off with some listener questions. Thank you to everyone who sent over things for Ia. The first one we'll dive right in is from Theo. And Theo asks, and you've touched on an experience you had earlier in the family constellation. So maybe that. Have you experienced the paranormal or other world in your life? How has it shaped you? And has this been something that you must conceal from colleagues, or are you able to be transparent about such things in your work?
Yes, and this is a beautiful question, because if we are supporting others articulate their experiences, how, you know, I think we become open once we have our own experiences, that we become more curious about it. And we are, our listening ears, you know, and all of our perceptors are much more receptive. So absolutely, I would not share certain things that I have experienced, even in martial art, with people, because it would be considered, you know, there is an explanation for it. But that explanation is not enough for me. That's why I'm diving deeper. Yes, I see that explanation. You know, it's my profession. But people often dismiss it because they have a concept. But that doesn't fit your conceptual framework, because you have experienced it slightly beyond, or slightly that is pushing or shattering those boundaries. So you're looking for an answer further. That's why it's important not to say it to people who will shatter you too early. So be precious about what you experience. It is not to be shared, but be that experience needs to be heard by humanity, by people. And that's why it needs to be revered and shared in appropriate circumstances, where you can fully explicate in the way that is helpful to you, to share the granularity of what happened and for other people to hear. And yes, I did have other experiences, which I'm still keeping it and processing it.
That's fair. Little Glowing Orb says, for Ia, does psychic potential increase in space? How so and why?
I don't know of the experiments, you know, if that holds true, the hypothesis. I would be interested to explore, though.
It's something that's talked about, isn't it? The idea that there's something that happens once you're there, or outside of the Earth's gravity, or whatever that may be. But no, that's totally fair. Thank you for the question. Melly says, does the doc have some advice for experiencers that want to stay as silent as possible, because the vast majority of family and friends will think they are mental if they say anything? So what would you say to experiencers who maybe are struggling or want to stay quiet?
Well, it's about how you're feeling. So if that, I guess this is the essence that we've touched on, and I feel it's precious that your experience, if you know you're not going to be listened to, it's probably not the helpful environment to start articulating your experience. So I think then it is better to find another way of expressing or finding the people that will understand. And there are now more and more opportunities like that, you know, where you can actually share. And also our problem that we have as humanity is that what other people think of us, because our social infrastructure depends on that. You know, then we are either not able to do our job or we are dismissed. So, but learning to deal with that in the way that is helpful for you. So don't put yourself in a spot where you would feel worse than you began. You know, look after yourself, nurture yourself. And then when people who may be not open to these experiences, they will come to it in their own time. Because forcing somebody, you know, in front of what they want to see, it could be devastating for them too. There is a reason why they don't want to hear it.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
Yeah, that's good advice. That's very understandable. Two more questions. First up from Matthew. For Dr. Whiteley, encounters with UAP and potential NHI have implications for societal as well as individual psychological resilience, the infamous issue of ontological shock. How do you think government should be tackling the issue, and what role do you see for academia and the UFO research community in encouraging and supporting them?
Well, absolutely. And that's why this community that is part of the SOUL organizers, and there are other people who are, you know, won't be able to make it to SOUL, or they're gathering in other places, and individuals like yourself, Andy, you know, who are doing this podcast and spreading the word, you know, people who work in the government, they're also listening. They might not be able to talk about this right now and in various positions. And it's about raising an understanding that experience exists. If we can't put it into words or into words that we can understand or process or apply our reality, you know, laws of reality as we know it, it doesn't mean we don't go and study. There are a lot of unusual things. That's how science came about, or a lot of science discoveries, scientific discoveries came forth. As Tim Gallaudet, right, the oceanographer, a rare admiral, retired rare admiral, speaks about that. I think he said that the volume, I think it's the modern mapping is like 25% of the ocean floor, but the volume of the ocean that's unexplored is something like we only explored 5%. So it's that much we don't know. And think of our volume of our mind. We don't even know where our mind is, you know, where our thoughts rest. If you listen to Dean Radin, who is a Noetic Science Institute, used to be a scientific lead, but part of the Noetic Scientific, so Science of Institute of Noetic Science, who was founded by Edgar Mitchell, who was the Apollo astronaut. You know, we could think of that we've only probably touched, you know, a miniature percentage of our known capability. So it's the same thing, that there's loads to explore.
No, that's really right. And I had a guest on quite recently who mentioned some work that was happening with Department of Defense, Department of Justice officials being interested. And after he mentioned it on this podcast, he then got in touch a day later to say the individuals had listened, and it wasn't like there was anything sinister to it. But people do listen to these podcasts and watch these shows, and they are interested. So folks might not be aware of that and think this is all just fans of the topic, but there are scientists, academics, military folks, government folks who are looking at various different aspects of this topic and exploring it in different ways. So yeah, it certainly has a bigger interest, I think, than we even realise in the political realms and the academic realms and scientific realms. And final question, a nice one to end on, from Purple Burglar, which is the most difficult name for me to say. If you had the chance to script humanity's first conversation with the intelligence behind UFOs, not for TV but for real, what single question would you write for us to ask them and why?
Yes, that's beautiful. It's a really tough one for me. I feel that it would be a feeling rather than a conversation. So I think to actually staying open as much as I can in my perception, and actually not starting to put concepts forward and asking questions, and staying like a child with curiosity, because our assumptions, which would form in my head if it's a telepathic conversation, would come from too much worry about, am I thinking the right thing? So I think I would go into martial art mode in regards to not for defensiveness, but in terms of perceptual mode of listening, or maybe even better to say as a Korean medicine therapist or as a breathwork therapist, where I am purely present. I am just purely listening for whatever has to rise or come up without anticipation and without reaction. I think that's the most useful to me. I would feel that would be productive, because as soon as I have my assumptions, there is like a chain reaction to what could happen. But if I'm willing and open and curious, then I think that's the way to start. I think if you if we go back to that scene in The Arrival, where I forgot the name of the doctor who was standing in front of this octopods, isn't it, or something they're called?
Yeah, tentacle creature, yeah.
Yes. Cephalopods, because they had a head.
That's the one, yeah.
Cephalopods, yeah. And she is just curious, exploring, and she removes, in a way, it's symbolic, but she removes all the gear that she's wearing to actually feel with her hands and be as she is in front of that species, which I think the barrier was put on by the species, not by us, that barrier. So once she removed that, the conversation began, and it wasn't in words. So that would be my... I like that journey that we just took.
Yeah, no, listen, thank you so much. And you've been on with me for nearly 2 hours now, and you have a very busy day. So we're going to let you go here. How can people get in touch with you? How can they find your work? What are the best ways to do that?
Well, thank you so much. I will just put like a link tree with many links where you can explore the projects that are coming up. And there are some juicy ones coming up, so please watch out. And we're interested soon for people to actually engage and interact. So let's see what happens. And of course, the book is coming up, the courses, the talks, the podcasts, and I welcome the opportunities as well. So thank you so much, Andy. This is a great opportunity, and thank you for the questions, from the audience.
That is all for this episode. Thank you very much for tuning in. Don't forget to leave the podcast a review on your chosen platform. Apple and Spotify do make a huge difference to the algorithm. If you're checking the show out on YouTube, please don't forget to like and leave a comment on here as well. Any sharing you do is very much appreciated on any social media platform. And finally, you can listen to shows ad-free and sponsor-free in their glorious full versions by subscribing for less than the price of a coffee on Apple, Spotify, just search That UFO Podcast Premium. YouTube, you can sign up and be a member, or you can do that through patreon.com. Thank you very much for listening, folks.
It wasn't a tic-tac and not quite a saucer, more like a hubcap designed by Chaucer. A little baroque and quite steampunk, like Alice was playing bass for the Parliament of Funk. The little fucker hovered right outside of my window, and when I shoved out the screen, he made it an issue.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paul Azan, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.